This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
The protests that have seemed to spring up around the world and in Canada, for example, during the recent Idle No More campaign, have something in common. Photographer and essayist Christopher Grabowski says it's the failure of electoral politics to actually address social justice, environmental crises, and economic inequality. And that means an increasing number of such issues are destined to be resolved through various forms of protest and civil disobedience. Before Christopher Grabowski moved to Canada in 1992, he was part of the Solidarity Movement in Poland, a social movement that started as a protest and then transformed society by non-electoral and mainly non-violent means. Grabowski writes in an article at the TAI that although he's not exactly experiencing déjà vu, much of what he is seeing and reading now is beginning to look familiar, and that makes him hopeful. We're joined on the phone now by Christopher Grabowski.
Welcome to People First Radio, Christopher.
Oh, hello.
Christopher, you write in your article that crises of the environment, social justice, and economic inequality loom large, while the failure of electoral politics means protest and civil disobedience. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think there is a deficit of democracy, even in the leading democracies. In Canada, only about half of the eligible people actually vote. And if the votes are split three or four ways in a particular riding, then the governing party gets selected by no more than 20% of eligible voters. If it's more than 20%, we call it a landslide. So we have this recurring paradox where majority governments are actually elected by minority of citizenry. The other thing is that politicians do talk about their ridings, policies or politics or issues only during campaigns. Once they are elected, they actually do their party politics, not their riding politics. So in this case, you know, majority of Canadians already long time ago made their minds about war in Afghanistan, gun registry, climate change, and many other issues. But the governing party does not actually see these issues the same way as majority of the electorate. So very few citizens feel that their priorities have any impact on the political process. People feel, and rightly, that they make more impact marching in the streets than talking to the elected representatives.
Tell us more about the protests we've seen in Canada. You describe them in your article as being either tightly focused or larger, diverse, and longer running.
In Canada, environmental protests are quite successful. When it comes to particular well-defined limited issues and urgent issues like Kwikset Sound or Haida Gwaii, this is perhaps because the environmental activists forged strong alliances with First Nations. There is some element of solidarity in this, which I talked about in my article. It is hard. I have this image in my head. It's hard to forget the image of Bill Reid, the world-renowned Haida Canadian sculptor, who in his 70s was sitting in the pouring rain in the middle of logging road in Haida Gwaii, waiting for the RCMP to come and arrest him for illegal blockade. So there is this interesting pattern concerning protest movements in Canada and elsewhere. The more solidarity is present, the more likely they would achieve their objective. Concerning the long-run campaigns like Greenpeace, for example, that was established in Vancouver in the 1970s, and it's now active worldwide. The Greenpeace and other groups like David Suzuki Foundation, they did tremendous job educating public about environmental issues, and resources extraction, fisheries, and so on. They had tremendous impact, big impact on the way natural resources are extracted now and on our environmental policies. But more recently, these campaigns began losing ground because the opponents, I would say, managed to reframe the whole environmental debate along the lines that say basically jobs versus some limited, isolated piece on the environment. Like some remote valley here or some insignificant river there or something like that, something nobody really needs, you know. This is very insincere, but quite effective form of propaganda, I would say.
You take a look as well in your article at a number of things that are happening internationally. You write that in Turkey, and this is during recent protests there, the prime minister declared protesters to be anti-democratic and that social media was a menace to society. But Turkey's president said that, quote unquote, democracy does not mean elections alone. Tell us more about those contrasting views and why you shared them.
Well, the Turkish prime minister apparently got surprised by the power of social media. Social media changed the dynamics of street protest significantly. They speed things up to the point where the administration cannot actually respond. So authorities are always surprised by unfolding situations and actions. And Turkey prime minister apparently got frustrated when his attempts to control his population by coercion failed. But I think he is mistaken labeling protesters anti-democratic. He should simply look in the mirror to find anti-democratic personality. And in terms of various forms and expression and various forms of democracy, of course there are alternatives. If you think about Switzerland, for example, which is a very stable, old and very stable democracy, Swiss are basically ruling by referenda. Every important issue is being publicized, discussed, and there's a referendum. Everybody votes on it. And having a very vibrant and diversified civil society, Switzerland, the population, the people learned to form temporary alliances. So, for example, there could be alliance of conservatives and environmentalists on certain issues, and on other issues, environmentalists and social democrats and labor movements can ally. And so they can put together the resources during the debate phase and influence the outcome of referendum this way. So this is very fluid dynamics, and this is very democratic way of running society. And it's very stable, and it's, you know, it works.
You write your observations from the perspective of someone who was present in Poland for the emergence of solidarity in the 1980s. Tell us more, Christopher, about your personal experiences and how they affect your observations of what's happening now around the world.
Yeah, I just wouldn't like to dwell about my personal experiences too much, from the past, but I think that things changed in terms of journalism and its involvement in social movements. It changed because of the internet and social media, and the people who can publish their opinions and their research, and they not necessarily need to be full-time journalists now. And some of these views can become very popular and well propagated. So we have to understand that the political establishment in any system, whether it's dictatorial, monarchy, democracy, the governing group or establishment always have a strong incentive to influence the media. And they also have means to do it. One of the ways is just putting personal pressure on journalists, or by offering incentives of some kind. But I think that despite of this, most journalists honestly try to maintain objectivity. But with the phenomenon of citizen journalism and whistleblowing, the whole landscape sort of changed. People can move between journalism, advocacy, various social movements, various issues, and still do something else, be an engineer or librarian or something like that. So the way the media evolved, they also contribute to the evolution of social movements.
The article that you wrote included a description of you feeling somewhat hopeful about the future from based on what you've seen. How have you been able to draw these observations of yours into a conclusion?
Well, I think that there should be some tipping point, you know, which I observed in Poland from sort of I would say that pessimism. At some point, pessimism sort of can give way to optimism, and with optimism can you know a different social dynamics can appear. So, I call it solidarity. It's a broad term, but these protest movements that are seriously criticized, and they have their shortcomings, of course, like Occupy movement, they offer a chance for solidarity, and then they offer a chance for individuals, groups, structures, organizations to gravitate towards the movement, towards the issue, and put their resources into a common pool. And with the growing pool of resources, the social power of such movement grows, and the abilities to form proposals, policies, and to influence other groups and the whole politics also grows. So there's a tipping point, and I'm sort of hopeful that we're reaching. We're close to, perhaps not yet there, but we are going there.
Christopher Grabowski, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Christopher Grabowski is a photographer and essayist based in Burnaby, British Columbia. You can find his article, Today's Democracy Revolts Through a Polish Lens, online at thetai.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.